Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And what's in placentia?
Well, my mother, which is a fancy word for saying free daycare, but we wanted to go do stuff. We wanted to go see the Avengers movie. We wanted to go to, we actually took Augie to Knott's Berry Farm yesterday because we got like a season pass. And
Do they still have like Boysenberry Day or whatever? Is it like?
That's what it was. It was the Boysenberry Festival.
Go ahead.
And
yeah,
I got it. It was a weird word. You probably know, but it was a corn on the cob with blueberry glaze over it. And that was the hot ticket. There's a line like 45 people deep to get your corn on the cob with the blueberry bullshit on it. It's delicious. It's really good. They also had, you know, you'll like this, Joe, a churro sundae.
Sure.
And which is probably nothing at Texas. I mean, that's like a salad, but it is it is frightening.
That's a good drink. That's a good drink right there. Churro salad.
It's a good starter. There's you know, maybe 75 grams of sugar in each bite, but you could improve. But it's great. I went to like a stunt show for like a cowboy stunt show, and because it's like Western themed, Knott's Berry Farm, and. But it's also they're just loading up the park with roller coasters. They're just everywhere. Hmm. So part of the stage, like the left side of the stage, is like a saloon and it has like a second floor where all the guys are doing pratfalls and stuff. It's supposed to totally be like we're in 1892, except for on the right side of the stage is this huge metal pole that's like the support for this roller, this like massively crazy looking roller coaster. And so like every 5 minutes, these screaming people are just upside down, suspended as they're twisting through the air, just right above this like Western stunt show. It was fantastic.
Why, but, partners?
In short.
Don't mind the coaster coming on overhead there. We got a good show and some sarsaparilla for you.
Sounds amazing. I'm about to take my pistols out of them steel workers if they come by my property anytime soon.
Sounds amazing.
The best part about going to amusement parks is just seeing all of the weird tattoos that everybody has now.
Amusement parks are great. They're great for getting in touch with the people of America. There are few places better where you can cross over from podcast listening America to people who don't know what podcasts are. Amusement parks are great.
Yep.
And the thing is, themselves a tank top too, so you get to see it all.
That's a choice of clothes. Of a tank
top. You ever seen a tattoo of a tank top? Now we're talking amusement park.
There we're getting there.
Well, there was this guy that was he had a Rams tattoo that was on the entirety of his calf.
It's just a tattoo, bro.
So it was probably like
I'm not actually a Rams fan. I just got the tattoo.
Just a tattoo, bro.
It's just some ink, bro. So it's like, you know, 4 or 5 inches, you know, in diameter. I mean, it was big, but the great part is where the horn is, rather than it being gold or yellow or white, it was just flesh colored. Like he was like, I don't know what color this helmet's supposed to be. Once they figured out, that'll fill in the rest of the tattoo
with the new rebrand. He'll fill it in.
I'm waiting for Demoff to announce them colors because I ain't gonna get the wrong St. Louis colors.
One of the things I always liked about going to Knott's Berry Farm and Magic Mountain growing up was coming from the not Los Angeles, the non-SoCal part of the world. And what's great, mm-hmm. especially because you mentioned the Western show, is that in the rest of the theme parks around America, those are not shows that have a lot of effort put into them. But because Southern California has such a motivated thespian culture, they really put effort into those shows, man. Those are not shows where the acting really suffers. That's one of those things where, like, you know, if you did the same show in like Virginia at like King's Dominion, right? It'd be like, hey, killed my daddy. I can't wait to find him. When you do it at like Knott's Berry Farm, it's like, he killed my father. I've stayed up every night for 48 years waiting to seek vengeance. Tomorrow, his name is buried with his body.
For your consideration, best performance at a stunt show.
Knott's Berry Farm, West Wild Stunt Show.
Well, I mean, you know, when you're going to do those, when you're going to like try out for a guest spot on Hunter or some other, you know, bad.
That's on your resume.
I was the angry drunk at Knott's Berry Farm on Saturdays from 2 to 4. We performed every 25 minutes, right underneath the corkscrew.
I got a buddy who performs at Disneyland, and he does the Frozen like live show.
How many of those guys have agents? Does he have an agent?
Oh, he does. He does. Yeah. And he works. He's on stuff. He's in Sharp Objects. I mean, yeah. It's interesting. I do need to tell you my favorite Knott's Berry Farm story. It'll only be a second.
I do like that you have so many Knott's Berry Farm stories that one of them, it can be your favorite.
Well, yeah, it's true. Well, you know what? You grow up about 15 minutes away from Knott's Berry Farm. You're going to have some stories. So this one is when I'm 10 years old and I was really into playing the piano and I thought Jerry Lee Lewis was super cool. Oh, and the Dennis Quaid movie came out, you know, with like Winona Ryder.
Great Balls of Fire.
Because I was playing the piano and I learned that song, and that was like my jam. Like if someone's like, "Hey man, can you play the piano?" I will play Great Balls of Fire, and I thought he was awesome. So my dad's like, "Hey, he's playing at Knott's Berry Farm this Wednesday at 8 p.m." I was like, "Let's do it." So we got admission, went into the park, went on a couple rides. I'm like, man, this is going to be great. I'm going to see my hero, Jerry Lee Lewis, at Knott's Berry Farm. So what do you think happened when he went up on stage to perform that night on a Wednesday, just some random day?
Slept with his sister.
Do you think he was drunk?
I was going to say he was pissed drunk, and he shat himself during his first like solo.
Yeah, no, he didn't. I mean, he didn't shit himself. That would have been a much more fantastic story. No, he was just ripped, just so drunk, and it was so sad. And it was just one of those moments that if it was on film, it would be one of those that like, kind of bummer, like, oh man, like
the moment you saw your hero die. I have Knott's Berry Farm memories growing up in Los Angeles before I moved to Seattle. Do they do the not scary farm thing still? Is that still a thing?
Oh, yeah.
When I was
you bet your ass it is.
Mid 18, 19, 20, 21, whatever it was, they would do the scary farm. They'd, you know, shut it down and haunt it up, and you'd go there and you'd have a good time and be an idiot kid. And it was always fun.
Yeah. Well, now Universal has that Halloween Horror Nights, which people seem to really like because it's intense.
Think about LA. You've got Knott's Berry Farm.
We did Magic Mountain Fright Fest.
Yeah, same thing, right? But LA's got Magic Mountain, it's got Disneyland, it's got Universal and Knott's Berry Farm, that's most places aren't even lucky to have one. Like we don't have roller coasters here. We have, if you want to go to roller coasters, you have to go drive to Idaho.
At least you have an NBA franchise, right? Oh, wait.
No, we don't even get that.
What the hell prompted that?
That was a shot.
It was.
Welcome to Terror Show Radio at some point. I'm at 3K underscore. What up, Robo? At Seattle Rams underscore NFL.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? And people and everyone else out there in draft land.
Draft land. We're going to get to the mocks. We're going to get to Rob's favorite mocks of the year. We're going to have a power ranking of Rob's top 10 favorite mocks from 2019.
I think we are.
Joey at LA Rams, Rams, Rams. What's up, Jerky?
I got to say, Judd, that was probably the most casual intro that you could possibly have. That'd be like, you know, when you're watching like a TV show
work on
and they don't have like like a long intro, but it'll just, you know, it'll just cut to the name of the show real fast. This is a TV show. You wouldn't even have that. It would just say like the name of the show, just kind of like in subtitles for like a hot second. In the first 10 minutes, and you're like, oh, well, yeah, cool. Show started. But that's the way we roll, man.
Yeah, just tripping in, right? Because we're all chatty. Spent from the Game of Thrones viewing. Everyone just hasn't recovered. Just got rolled.
So every website, every podcast has to acknowledge that this little period, however long it goes on, between Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgame is, is it the peak of pop culture of 2019? Is it the end of pop culture? Is it the end of this chapter? I don't know what it is. What the fuck? Game of Thrones, Avengers Endgame. Somebody go.
Well, you have to add in the NFL draft, and you just have this week of, you know, there has to be someone in the relationship who's just kind of going, what the fuck? When are we going to hang out?
How did the NFL draft broadcast not have like Iron Man in it or Arya? How did they not tie that in? What the fuck?
Because the NFL doesn't have so easy to get in there.
I think the reason why this whole week has been crazy is that everybody's watching it. It's not like you're like, oh, well, I didn't watch the NFL draft because I had to go see the Avengers. I think everyone's just consuming all of this at this kind of – it's just coincidence that these big things are happening in the same time frame. But I know that it's – with two kids, and especially with a baby, it's kind of hard to get to a three-hour movie. And then the next night, you're just like, okay, you know, tired. We could watch it. And then it's like, it's an hour and a half. And it's just a war with no talking. And you're like, okay, I can do this. It's just exhausting.
I love the idea I love the idea that the hour and a half is the short thing now. Like Game of Thrones was a feature film. Mm-hmm. And we're like, I can knock this out.
Right.
Yeah.
I've seen it twice.
Yeah.
GOT.
How dark was it, Robbo? Could you see it? Was it too dark?
I actually loved the dark cinematography. It felt like, because, you know, it's a battle taking place in the middle of the night with a fucking blizzard going on, so you can't see anyways. And then a lot of the stuff happens in a dingy old dark castle where there's, you know, every 30 feet there's a torch. It's supposed to be dark, and they meant it that way. And I think the music played to that, and I loved it. So anyone who was complaining about they couldn't see it, I don't know, adjust the brightness of your TV or just sit back and enjoy the shit that's going on and stop.
And don't see it.
Perfect.
Enjoy not seeing it.
They wanted you to not see the entire screen. They wanted you to focus on certain parts and flashes. I mean, it kind of felt like a horror movie. That battle scenes were just, you couldn't make things out, just hacking and slashing. You could see parts of a head being lopped off and the dead just crawling over all over the place. And they wanted to scare the shit out of you. And then right towards the end, they drop, like, if I don't know if you noticed it, but the score drops into like a piano melody, and they play this eerie piano shit, and it was great. It just worked really well. Built the drama up, and I was mainlining the hell out of that. I loved it. It was pretty great. So if you didn't like it, it was too dark and you couldn't see, and I wish they would have, fuck you. Sorry.
No,
don't care. I don't care.
That's the best review. I liked it. If you don't, fuck you.
Yeah. No, Vox.com ran their winners and losers, and one of the winners was Ramin Djawadi, the composer for the show, and talked about the 10 minutes that they called it the beautiful, haunting music, which dropped into a solo piano with minimal orchestral backing when it seems like all hope is lost. I thought it was great. It was fun.
Just starting with the NFL draft talk, I'd be curious to think just general, not Los Angeles Rams related, but just generally on the NFL draft. What do you think were the big narratives coming out of the draft? Would you say it's just the quarterbacks? It seems like when you watch the, you know, the news and stuff, everything's just about like just the Giants and the Redskins because they made the big plays for quarterback.
I've got one.
Well, and Rosen's made some circles.
Mine's bigger. I got a big, big, big picture.
Mine's bigger. All right. You don't need to brag.
No. here's my thing is, I don't know if you guys looked at the numbers, but the NFL draft somehow got watched by more people. I don't get it, man. Who didn't watch the draft last year? That's like, I guess I'll turn into the drag. Where are these people coming from? How do we keep getting more? that baseball and basketball and hockey is like, I don't know, I think we're tapped out. But the NFL keeps getting more.
It's the promise of excitement, right? Because the draft just, for entertainment value, wasn't that exciting. If you just if you didn't have a dog in the hunt, it wasn't that great of an event.
There were more trades this year than ever. That's exciting.
But those are the same.
But substantial trades, though, I don't really think.
But the first, like, especially the first round, it went pretty much by the book, right? There were not a bunch of big surprises other than the Giants pick.
Those are the same kind of conditions for the NBA draft and the NHL draft, and nobody watches those.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. More people watch.
I watch the NBA.
You do? Well, I do too. Really? I have to watch. Really? You weirdo. More people watch the NFL draft than watch, you know, the NBA finals and the World Series. I'm just confused about how the NFL is continuing. All these other leagues are finding ways, and maybe soccer is kind of the alternative, and esports where they're tapping into the kids that do not listen to this podcast because none of our references make any sense. But the NFL, despite being the NFL that can attract us and our non-kids audience, continues to find ways to bring them in and to bring, you know, people under 50 in. I don't know. It's one of those things that if you look at what they did this week in Nashville and with the broadcast, they're succeeding in continuing to grow this brand, and I don't understand how.
Guys, it's a big day for me because I'm a Jared Goff stan, is that there's the announcement by Banana Republic that Jared Goff has an endorsement deal and he's going to be featured in advertising. Multiple advertisements. He's going to be the face of Banana Republic. I think it's a great fit. I think we were talking about companies that he should do an ad campaign for. And we were talking about Pizza Hut. We were talking about Coors Light. And he even did one better because it is such a vanilla brand. But also, do you know what? 80% of the clothes I wear are Banana Republic. Like, that's the store I go to. That's where I shop. Like, I am a Banana Republic dude. So once I saw
Where do you shop, Robbo? I'm interested. That Joey's an 80%.
Well, I'm in Lucky Brand. I'm like Lucky Banana Republic. I'm wearing a Banana Republic shirt right now in Lucky Brand jeans.
I am probably more white than Joey when it comes to where I shop. I shop at Nordstrom
Target. There's
a rack next to the house and there's one like really close to my office, and so I usually pop in Nordstrom rack.
That's smart.
So instead of buying, you know, $200 jeans, they cost me a mere $85.
I'm wearing my pants are Lucky right now, so I'm on a Joey tip. I can get down.
Is this going to be like Matthew McConaughey doing like the Lincoln cars, or is it just going to be like only
LA
80 people?
Here's what I don't understand. Are they talking about like Banana Republic commercials?
Print ads.
Because here's the thing. Have you ever seen a Banana Republic commercial?
No. I've seen the print ads though.
Yeah, I've never seen. I didn't know that Banana Republic marketed anywhere ever. I didn't.
Well, you know what I can see?
Maybe it's new. Maybe.
I think if you go downtown LA and you go see, you know, you go to the Staples Center, I bet you they're like across from that, there's going to be a big, like on the side of a building, an ad with Jared Goff's face for Banana Republic. I think in the city, in like in Hollywood, I could also see them, you know, in Hollywood Highland putting up a big sign. So just people driving around Los Angeles, they're in Hollywood, they're in the heart of the city, they're seeing huge, gigantic photos of Jared Goff. I think that's a good start. And if it says Banana Republic, fine, whatever. But I think it's more about just getting his face out there, man. Everybody needs to know what this guy looks like so they can want to go see him play and make him famous. He's a super
Do you know how they worded this announcement? Banana Republic style ambassador.
How does he say Banana Republic? Banana.
Hey mom, Banana Republic wants to pay me to be their style guide. Jared, I think they meant style ambassador. They're going to give me a crown and a robe. They're going to give Higgs a scepter.
Higgs! Bow!
I have a scepter now!
Higgs is going to be... He's gonna go to every shoot with him, right? Higgs, bro, can you pass me?
It'd be like
can you pass me the
like a perfume commercial. They asked me chinos,
But I said, she yes. Banana Republic.
I could see Higgs just sitting there on the side, like in like a director's chair, just with a bag of like energy bars, just like unwrapped.
Dude, it means more neon.
I swear, I mean, I'm sitting here, we're talking about this. I pulled up the press release on PR Newswire. It's fucking great.
Yes.
As a fierce competitor known for his cool confidence on and off the field, Jared is the perfect athlete to bring the benefits of our core temp product line to life. This product innovation is Jared's style of play and are both examples of natural performance that is cool under pressure. I don't think the Banana Republic people watched the Bears game, did they? Did the Banana Republic watch the Bears game? It was under pressure. And then Goff. Shooting this campaign was an awesome experience. We really pushed Banana Republic's performance clothing on max. Special.
Wait. Start over. I'm going to play the guitar solo from the beginning of Hot to Teacher. Read the whole thing. I'm totally going to do this. Read the whole thing.
This better be studio accurate.
Do it.
Read it in Goff voice. Shooting this campaign was an awesome experience. We really pushed Banana Republic performers' clothing to the max. Not even fire and volcano special effects could stop this stuff. Comfort, movement, and style are key for me. And this core temp collection delivers.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. Oh. This is unbelievable. This shit needs a pilot for the site, by the way. I'm going to put it in Slack right now. It's fucking gold. I'm so glad you saw that. I'm so glad you caught that, Joey, because it's fucking...
I'm just going to be cross the 2019 NFL Draft Los Angeles Rams. Really, pretty good.
I feel bad for you because there'll be a lot of editing tonight.
So I hear you're making like minute two of the podcast for the people coming down and the roller coasters.
All right,
you ready?
Showtime
on May 3rd. Summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Round 2, pick 61.
Hey, Dirk.
Taylor Rapp, safety out of Washington. Round 3, 70. Daryl Henderson, running back Memphis. Round 3, 79, David Long, cornerback, Michigan. Round 3, 97, Bobby Evans, offensive lineman out of Oklahoma. Round 4, Washington defensive tackle, Greg Gaines. Round 5, David Edwards, Wisconsin offensive tackle. And then our two seventh-round picks, Nick Scott, safety out of Penn State, Dakota Allen, linebacker, Texas Tech. There's a ton to unpack there, man. Robbo, you take it first. You're the Washington guy. We got two Washington kids in Taylor Rapp and Greg Gaines. A lot of people, myself included, thought Taylor Rapp could be involved. It ended up happening after a bunch of trades down. What do you think, Ben? How did you feel starting off with Taylor Rapp? How do you feel about the draft? What's your general feeling?
I wish this podcast was actually a visual, because then I could go back to our Slack archives of probably right after the Super Bowl, and I started talking about Taylor Rapp. Like, oh, it'd be great. I love him. I never actually thought he would be a Ram, but
you're so anti-mock that you dismissed your own mock of Taylor Rapp. That's how anti-mock they are.
Oh man, I mean, I just didn't think he'd end up a Ram. But I love watching the guy play, and I'm like, he loves playing football. He's got a nose for the ball. He's always around the ball. He plays hard. He plays injured. He's just a fun guy to watch. I think he's going to be one of those players that Rams fans gravitate towards too. I mean, we all like our guys, but people tend to like hustle and grit and heart guys. And I think that's what he is. And he's scrappy. He's he's going to be a fun player to watch. I think he's going to be a good addition. He can play on the line of scrimmage. He's a good tackler. If you get the I'm sure you can do the McVay voice of talking about his short space quickness and all that, but he just has a knack for the football. He knows he's always around the damn ball. The ball's on the ground, he's there. The ball's tipped up, it's just what he's done. Now he was outstanding as a freshman at Washington. I believe he was Pac-10 freshman of the year. He was pretty good as a sophomore, and then he dialed back a little bit, but I think he's gonna be a good fit. I think it'll be fun. And it's even better that he doesn't have to come in and start right away. He gets to play behind Weddle, gets to learn. He'll probably, as the season goes on, we'll see how it goes and how much more playing time he gets. But I think it's a perfect situation for him to come in, not have to be a key contributor to 2019. He's great on special teams. I think he's a damn good fit, especially when we started talking about roster gaps on this team and how we're going to start filling some of these guys, whatever. Perfect. I think it's just perfect. I love it. I love it. I love it. And then Greg Gaines, he's just a big old gap stuffing pile of beef. I mean, you're not going to get much out of the pass rush from him, but when it comes to stopping the run, that man can eat a double team like a double-double. He is a big, round, bearded dude. He looks could have
been on Game of Thrones.
He's at home chugging buds. He's a more athletic Sam Moltarly. He's just a big, round. He reminded me of like a Jeff Zanina with a beard. Just a big, thick, round. I mean, he's not chiseled. He's what you want a nose tackle to look like. He has got junk in the trunk, in the bonnet, in the hood. There's junk everywhere. He's got a big, thick beard, and the man eats double teams, which is good news.
A lot of times you can tell when these guys, they start playing football and their coach puts them at defensive line and they have to work to like build their body to meet that position. The way you can tell Greg Gaines is not that kind of guy is his legs and his calves. That boy's calves are the size of Sean McVay. His calves. Like, they're so thick. And I get it. Some people are just big boned, and that's Greg Gaines. But it's so funny to see him out there playing. If you see him next to like other guys on the offensive line, like guys like Rob Havenstein, we're going to see that probably at some point where Greg Gaines is going to go against these guys on the offensive line. And you're going to see guys that have had to work hard to like build their body to meet the position. Greg Gaines is not that guy. Greg Gaines was 16 and he was already like, man, I got to scale back. I can't. This is getting out of control.
That's exactly right.
Y'all got he's, any extra large socks? Because these ain't working.
I hope he steals Jared Goff's shower shoes and then stretches them out one time. He puts his feet into those and Jared gets them back and they're just super loose because Greg Gaines jammed his feet into it. Yeah, he's a big, thick, Tony Siragusa shaped kind of guy. He's just a giant dude. I mean, he's not super tall, but what is he? He's like a rectangle. Just look at him. He looks nose tackle. I think he's like,
Coach, these are great. These socks are great. These socks are going to work perfect. Greg, those are pants.
Do you see out of all the picks that he has the easiest path, or I should say easiest path, but the best path to play in time?
No.
Given on performance.
No, there's somebody else.
No, I know where you're going. Joey, take it.
I was going to say, Joey's got to go first. We got to get Joey some time on. What do you think, Joey? Taylor Rapp, Daryl Henderson, David Long. Before we get to the UDFAs, Taylor Rapp, Daryl Henderson, David Long, Bobby Evans, Greg Gaines, David Edwards, Nick Scott, Dakota Island. Obviously, when you get to the day three guys, besides Greg Gaines is one of these guys that they seem like they had a role for on defense. Edwards, Scott, and Allen obviously probably likely looking at special teams and probably just trying to make the roster. But what do you think about the draft?
Well, I definitely like how they started with Taylor Rapp. I mean, it just feels like they're trying to address the run defense. And I think getting a guy that just has the fundamentals of being able to be a good tackler, I think that's just a smart move. But also when you look at their other pick, David Long, I like that too because it just sees them thinking about the future with their secondary. I think it's just nice that they're spending like a third round pick on a guy that they can have someone like Aqib Talib mentor, and he could be a guy that could be a starter in a couple of years. I think that's probably what we're expecting, with a third round talent you're drafting a cornerback. It's like, okay, he's going to be our starting cornerback in a couple seasons. So there's that. And then there's also Bobby Evans, who I feel a little bit, I guess, cautious right now of expecting him to be a starter. He could very well be, but it just feels like he's a work in progress. And there's just a question of like, okay, well, is he better as a right tackle or can he be a guard? And it just seems like he kind of has some issues with leverage and, you know, he is just a little bit shorter than what the position needs to be. So it just doesn't feel like it's like that's our answer at the offensive line. It just kind of feels like, okay, well, here's another guy. What do you think? Do you have a little bit more of an excitement towards Bobby Evans?
How many games have you seen Bobby Evans play last year, Joe?
In the last year, probably about six or seven. In the last 3 years, I've probably seen about 25. I've seen a lot of Oklahoma football, but the problem with grading Bobby Evans is that line was so good where they were stacked across. I mean, you saw Cody Ford, obviously, everybody.
Didn't they have four get drafted? Everyone but the center who was under
classmen. Yeah, they were one of the best, and even the center might be the best of them all when you talk about Creed Humphrey. They're incredibly talented. I don't know. It's one of those things where how do you isolate Bobby Evans versus everything else that was going on with that line and having to block. If you look at his tape, he's having to block for Kyler Murray this last year and Baker Mayfield. That is completely different than blocking for Jared Goff. You're not going to have to extend plays outside the pocket 6, 7, 8. If you watch Kyler Murray, I know a lot of people watch his highlights and stuff, but if you watch Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, it's not as much as the idea that they can run like Lamar Jackson or like other guys who are mobile, that they get design runs. It's more that, almost like Russell Wilson, you've seen this a ton, Rob, where the pressure comes and he just steps up in the pocket and all of a sudden you're not even playing NFL. You're just playing fucking sandlot football where they're just running. And how do you even block for that as an offensive lineman? And that's the kind of skill that Bobby Evans has gained. And part of that is being able to deal with, once your blocking assignment breaks down, what do you do? He's got maybe more experience than almost anybody in the country because he's blocked for Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield. And that's what makes him interesting as an addition. I don't know. Overall, I really like the class. What did I give it? I think I give it a B+. But I think the bigger thing is when we do these grades, I think one of the things I need to start including, and I should press people to start including, is the degree of difficulty. The degree of difficulty for this class and last year's class for the Rams was not that high. This is not a team like the Cardinals or the Raiders or the Giants or, you know, teams that need this class to begin to carry their team out of the bottom, right? Or teams that need guys to come in and immediately week one make a huge difference. The Rams didn't play anybody from the last draft class. I wouldn't be surprised if we go through 2019 and none of the draft picks log significant, you know, time on the offense or defense. Our roster is just too good right now and too stacked to allow for a ton of opportunity maybe for rookies. And I don't think it's a bad thing, but I think when we talk about draft grades and how we think about the draft, I think we also need to think about what kind of a draft class this is. And for the Rams, it's something about filling in roles in the middle of the roster more so than getting guys that need to come in and make us better immediately.
Who led the team in snaps last year as a rookie? Would it be JFM?
Maybe? I don't know. Maybe, probably.
As a rotation guy. And I think Grant Gaines is probably going to get the biggest shot because Sue's not there anymore, and they haven't needed on the road. And Westbrook's is gone, so they have holes in the D line. But no, I think you're right. I think you're going to see a lot of special teams from these guys. You might see them unless there's an injury. Not a lot of play, which is okay. You have a good team. You have a good roster. You don't need to
I have a question.
Rookies coming in play. That's what bad teams do.
Yeah, that's nothing against the draft class. That's not the draft class's fault that they're not going to get snaps. It just means that we're that good that we don't have
have a question. With the departure of Sue, now we have a defensive lineman that is not an obvious choice to be a starter. We're not going to keep Tanzel Smart. Are we going to be starting John Franklin Myers? Is he going to get significant time on the D-line next to Aaron Donald and Brockers? Or who right now is the most likely player to get significant minutes on the defensive line next to Donald and Brockers?
That's That sounds like a training camp question, Joey. I mean, that's what this is, right? We're gonna go into training camp and we're gonna sort these guys out because you got a bunch of candidates. And that's the thing is, we haven't even gotten to the UDFAs and we can keep pushing that back, but I wouldn't count those guys out because I know we talk about draft status as if it's this be all end all, but I don't know that when you get to camp, when you're sorting through the guys that can start to, maybe not necessarily for Ndamukong Suh, but a lot of the roles and the opportunities on this team, I don't know that you're not going to have UDFA's challenge for that. Austin Blythe just came in 2 years later.
Okay, yeah, but
earned a starting role on the offensive line.
Right.
I think this is
Jamon
kind
Brown
of where
who we were slating as being the starter, and he ended up being fine with that job. So I guess my question is, it feels like we have two positions in the defense that right now don't really have an obvious starter. And that to me is the defensive tackle, just, you know, nose tackle, and inside linebacker next to Corey Littleton. Do you guys feel like if you fill out the starting card, do you put Micah Kizer inside linebacker? And who do you put on the line next to Brockers and Donald?
You have to answer the question for me. Is Clay Matthews going to play edge or is he playing middle linebacker?
I don't know. Well, what is he playing?
Or both. He's played both with Green Bay.
I have a lot of questions, guys.
He's played middle.
I'm excited, but I kind of feel like their draft in one way presented it like, oh yeah, we don't really need to address that many holes. But coming out of it seems like, I don't know, guys, you kind of have a couple holes on defense.
Sure. And well, you wrote that. There was a great piece by Joey O about roster needs. And I think that's one of those things is that you get roster needs and you try to figure out how to manage them and how to staff them appropriately. And that's going to be part of the fun in the training camp. One thing I would say is that when you talk about defensive line, inside linebacker, is that Sosa wrote a piece this week about the theme of the Rams 2019 offseason being to improve the run defense. And, I think it's clear between the draft and the free agency period that they had was that they made some picks to shore that up. And I think that was a clear effort. Now, how they go about manage that in, I guess you can take the offseason program seriously and say that and organize team activities and all that stuff going into training camp and then preseason is part of the process. But I think that's part of the fun too as a fan of saying we don't have things settled. And, you know, despite having a defense with Aaron Donald and Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib and John Johnson and Clay Matthews and Eric Weddle, we got all these guys that we know. We've got some spots up. You know, the roster battles are legitimate, and I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And I don't, especially with this coaching staff, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think whoever wins that could be somebody that we could really get excited about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No doubt. Competition. That's you bring, I mean, how many draft guys, picks did we keep on the roster last year off the top of your head? Do you know, is it because they kept a lot? They kept like the Justin Waller.
Yeah, I think it was like seven.
They kept a lot of those guys, and I think you see them battling, their jobs aren't safe just because they were there last year.
No.
You brought this class in, and they're going to all challenge. You know who's going to challenge for a spot and probably stick? Seventh rounder Nick Scott, safety.
Why not?
Why? Because special Bones teams, actually targeted him. I don't know if you saw it, but Bones targeted him before the combine, specifically made a request to have him as one of the interviews, and he told them at the combine, get ready, we're coming for you because this is your role. He's outstanding on special teams. Bones loved what he can do with them. And look at what Bones has done with other guys. He made Cody Davis a name. He found use for Isaiah Pete on special teams. He made Corey Littleton a pro bowler. He's very good at finding guys to do what he needs to do and unleashing them. And I do not be surprised when Nick Scott is making the plays that that other guys that you used to stand in the past.
Bryce Hager.
That's what they do.
With the departure of
Bryce Hager. He could be the new Bryce Hager.
Yeah.
If you want to see that, you can actually see like the Rams do their videos about, here's the phone call, whatever. And they did the phone call with Nick Scott. And it was Bowen saying, hey, remember I talked to you at the combine? You ready to go? And he's like, yes, sir. I'm your guy. I'm going to do everything you want me to do. And that's why he picked out the one guy and they used the seventh round draft pick to get him rather than wait to go UDFA. That way they got their guy. But you know, they had seventh rounders make the team last year. It's competition and it's what you want from the back of your roster. You want these guys fighting and let the best 53 make it.
Here we go.
And place your practice.
Let's do it. We're feeling good. We're talking about the draft. We like what they've done. We're excited about the team. We've got to go. Everybody sack up. Take a deep breath. The Rams traded up. Here we go. 9 months after they made Todd Gurley the highest paid running back in the NFL, they traded up. This is just a fact. I get it. It's only the third round, and they're going to Twitter. Trade up to take Darrell Henderson, a very good, a very talented prospect, one I love. I'm very high on Darrell Henderson as a running back prospect. What the fuck?
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, we're fine. If you look, I think we got the contract.
Get that boy some Carolina barbecue.
we got Gurley's contract till 2022, right, Joe? Like, we are financially committed to paying him good portions of our salary cap. And right now, his role is unknown. It is officially, I think, the team, the party line is that he's the focal point, right? That's what the last we spoke.
I get it. That's a PR. That's a talking point. What does it mean? Do we have any idea whether that's 15 carries per game or five?
Here's what I think it means. I feel like it's like when Reggie Bush in his last couple seasons, I kind of feels like that, where he's basically going to be a passing threat. He's going to be getting more receptions than he has touches, and you're going to get this Darrell Henderson in, and he's going to be more of a down the middle guy. I think he's going to be a little bit more of a physical runner.
So are you saying that Todd Gurley should
not going to have Todd Gurley get touched?
He shouldn't play as the Edwards Jones.
Yeah, I think you want just kind of him bubble screens and him just running out of bounds and not getting hit. I don't know. It feels like the
Franco Harris,
the identity of the team has got a little bit of a wrinkle of a definition, and I feel like Todd Gurley being the only guy that's going to be touching the ball on an offensive drive is kind of out the window now.
Did you hear either of you hear Sean McVay answer that question this weekend? You just drafted this guy. What's that mean for Todd Gurley? And he immediately defaulted to Malcolm Brown. Well, you know, when you got a Malcolm Brown, and he didn't forget about the guy we're actually talking and you're paying a lot of money to. When you got
that was
Malcolm
a great
Brown,
question from Vinny Bonsignore from The Athletic. That was a perfect question to push him to answer it. I do wonder, like, what that means. And I get it. It's just a talking point. And a lot of times these talking points are meant to deflect, because you talk about how many times is Sean McVay going to have to talk to assembled Rams media between now and training camp? Maybe five times. Every day, but how many every days is that? Maybe like five or six. So if he just says it five or six times and then they get to training camp and they figure it out, what's the penalty he's going to pay? He's not going to suffer from that, especially as long as the team's winning. So I don't know, man. It's one of these things. Part of the problem is you don't make a guy the highest paid running back in the NFL and then draft somebody in the top 70 of the NFL draft the next draft. You don't do that ever unless something's
wrong.
Number two.
When was the Gurley contract? When was it? Was it before the season?
It was right before.
So they didn't do that after he hurt himself in week one against the Raiders.
Right. Correct.
All right.
Correct. Yeah. So it was before the season, but it was with time left on his contract. And you know, that's not even the thing, because I don't have a problem with them giving him the contract. I know a lot of people do, and a lot of people have an issue with paying running backs that much and all that kind of stuff. But the other thing is, this isn't John Kelly. As much as we all love John Kelly and we can whisper his name in the wind, the Rams drafted John Kelly in the fifth round. And after Malcolm Brown got hurt for 2 weeks, they never gave John Kelly a shot. Then they signed C.J. Anderson and immediately leapfrogged him in front of John Kelly and Justin Davis on the depth chart. So they never felt – they clearly felt John Kelly was more of a special teams addition than a running back. That is not what Darrell Henderson is. Darrell Henderson is coming onto this team to run the ball, to get carries. And as a rookie running back, you can do that from week one. I will say this. I think if you were impressed by Justin Davis or John Kelly to any degree in the preseason, you're going to love Darrell Henderson. This kid is way more talented, and part of that is skill set. Part of that is also just who he is as a guy. This is good. When I wrote the idea that the Rams can't re-sign C.J. Anderson because they need Todd Gurley to be the guy. Well, they blew that shit all the way up because Daryl Henderson needs carries. This dude is good. He's really good. I'm totally excited about him getting time because he's incredibly talented, but that means we've got the highest paid running back in the NFL that's going into a job share. And for whatever that means,
it's I don't think people want to talk about it.
With not only one, but two back.
Malcolm's going to like see the film too. That this is an
overblown story. I don't even know.
It's a little bit of Rams fans kind of just not wanting to address this right now and being like, okay, when we get to that point, sure. Fine. But right now, I think Todd Gurley is still on the – when you type in therams.com, it's a leaping Todd Gurley over the font. So it's going to be interesting to see this image of a team, the face of the team. And this stuff happens quick, especially in the season when someone puts up big numbers. I mean, if Daryl Henderson runs for 150 yards and gets three touchdowns in a game, it's like, boom, like that. Everybody's like, oh, okay, cool. This is who the team is.
I mean,
Daryl Henderson leaping over.
Who has scored the most touchdowns in the last 2 years?
Sure.
Was that Todd Gurley? He scored out of the last couple of years. I mean, he's the leading NFL's touchdown guy. So, they're going to, of course, he's the face of the franchise. And are they doing this so they don't have to answer the question because they don't know the answer yet? Or are they trying to protect Todd Gurley's ego where, we got you, Todd. It's okay. You're still our guy because we're going to have to pay you in 2022. Or is it a combination?
Yeah.
It's interesting, but it's not going to go away. We'll talk about it every week. Every reporter will gloss over it every week. The Rams will shine it off to Malcolm Brown every week. It's going to be this way. Until Todd Gurley's not going to touch a football in the summer. We won't see him other than running some drills. He's not going to play in the summer. This is going to go till September. It's not, and it's only going to get worse.
It's also a outcome of how the Rams played this from a PR standpoint and how the media was slow to really challenge what the Rams were selling. And here's a good example. I wrote my three locks going into the draft. The three things I was certain were going to happen. Number one, they were going to draft a safety before day three. Well, they took one with the first fucking pick. Obviously, that clearly happened. Number two, there were going to be trades. Well, we traded down three times for our first pick. Granted, these are the coldest takes of all time, but that's why I was certain that these were going to happen. There was going to be a safety. There was going to be trades. And number three, that Todd Gurley's knee would affect how we manage the draft. And there was somebody that tweet when I wrote that, there was somebody that sent us this was his tweet. I should have brought it up so I could read it verbatim. But what his tweet essentially was, oh, that means that we're not going to draft a running back because Todd Gurley's knee is fine. Got it. Well, guess what? Guess the fuck what? Quite the opposite, man. If you were so confident that Todd Gurley didn't have any issue with his knee and that meant the Rams weren't going to draft a running back, your world should have been turned upside down. But the difference is it should have been turned upside down by now. That there's still this camp that's struggling with the Rams' public statements. And, you know, whether it's Sean McVay saying he's 100% or Todd Gurley saying if he was injured, he'd be on the injury report, or even what they said after the draft, right? Which is, oh, we needed a change of pace back and we've been looking for one. We just haven't found. You just drafted one last year in John Kelly. You just had one. If you wanted one, you had Malcolm Brown. You never played those guys the way you played CJ Anderson. And when you played him, you didn't re-sign him. So there's just not a lot of reason to take their statements at face value publicly right now. And there's still a lot of Rams fans trying to sort through that and doing so pretty poorly.
Well, I asked you on Slack, at our little Slack, so you know you guys couldn't see this.
Well, be careful. Slack DMs.
So well, Slack DMs.
To ask me some uncomfortable questions. I don't want to talk about that, but we can go into our DMs today.
Sean McVay's, one of his first moves he did when he was named a coach, who did he sign? Lance Dunbar, change of pace, kind of whatever, third down back. Are they going to try to claim that this is what that didn't work out, he got hurt? Are they going to start using we got him because we've kind of wanted to do this, but we just didn't have the guys to do it with? Are they going to start using
Daryl? Imagine how much gullibility it takes to believe that, oh, We signed Lance to get 8 carries a game away from Todd Gurley.
He already mentioned at his presser. He's like, oh, he's going to let us do lots of stuff to get us. That way we can get out of 11 personnel. We could do some different things that he's going to allow us to do. He's already laying the groundwork for it. He mentioned it on his presser. We want to get away from 11 personnel exclusively. We want to be able to do some other things. And his credit, Henderson ran some wildcat at Memphis. So, yes, he can do some other things. But they're already laying the groundwork for the damage control. I'm a conspiracy theorist at heart, and I'm digging all of this.
Yeah, totally. I don't know how much of a conspiracy theory that it is that a third round pick is going to get some playing time.
Right.
Our second round and our third round picks are guys that we should expect to be at least a moderate contributor to the team throughout the season. And if they're not getting any playing time, it's like, oh, wow, something went south on that pick. All in the third round? How many picks did we get in the third round? Is it 3 or 4?
Rapp was in the second. Henderson, Long, and Evans were in the third.
Yeah.
Here's what's strange is we're talking about Greg Gaines, who was 64 picks after Henderson.
Yeah.
Coming in the fourth round, talking about, plug Greg Gaines in, he's fine. Darrell Henderson was 64 picks before him at running back, which is a position that carries much less value.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing. And if he ends up getting, almost a Malcolm Brown share of touches, but he's a really good running back.
He's got to get more. Here's the difference. Malcolm Brown was an undrafted free agent. Darrell Henderson traded up to get a – yep, he's good. He's really I get it. Not everybody watches Memphis football. There are some football sluts like me that just whore out on Conference USA football. Darrell Henderson's really good, man.
Joe, is there a site out there that you know of where someone might have wrote about the fit of Darrell Henderson with the Rams offense? Is there someone
– Never anywhere.
Write about that today? Some kid from Ontario, Canada.
Or somebody that wrote about it before the draft that said, hey, the Rams might take a pick. Don't get me wrong. Showing love to Sosa.
I was just thinking the fit of Henderson and the Rams.
Sosa had a great pick on his Darrell Henderson profile, and he's got more coming. Love to Sosa. Great read. Read everything Sosa writes. He gets it. I wrote before the draft. Could the Rams draft a running back in the first 3 rounds? And the answer was yes. It was kind of obvious, man.
There was some anger on those posts, by the way. There was some reaction.
Which is weird because we did it. And we did it because it makes sense. If Gurley can't go the full extent of what he went to start last year, you've got to get somebody talented to spell him. And Darrell Henderson is extremely talented. Here's the way I would put it. The same way that people fell in love with C.J. Anderson once he started putting up yards, people are going to fall in love with Darrell Henderson, man. He's really good.
People fell in love with Darrell Richards because he had some outside runs. I mean, anyone who does well, people fall in love with.
I think these two players can coexist. I don't think that Todd Gurley is the type of guy that's he doesn't have that sort of wide receiver personality where, he's like, it's me.
What did we start the pot off with? Barbecue. Did you see Todd Gurley's tweet, Tanerson? Bring me that Memphis barbecue.
Right.
Let's bring it full circle.
Yeah, he's saying all the right things.
I do like the idea that in Brian Allen and Greg Gaines, you've got these kind of, mountain men, like old school Western guys. I know you did, Robbo. Did you see the Behind the Grind, Joey, on Joseph Noteboom?
I did, and he is not going to be a style ambassador for any department. Robinson's or Old Navy or The Gap, none of those companies are going to be like, who should be our style ambassador? Joseph Noteboom.
I do like the idea that you could be like, Banana Republic, Jared Goff, what do you think? Well, I'll think, Western style is always represented. Joseph Noteboom, what do you think about our style? Close.
That's how I wear your pants.
Everybody.
What are the chances? In what year will we have such a thing as a masturbation garden? That's a thing that's coming.
That sounds like an album by Spinal Tap, Masturbation Garden.
I think a masturbation garden. I call that Vons.